Ephesus. This is the third week in a row that I'm going to tell you this, or at least say this to you. But go read the story of Joseph. Genesis 37 through 50, my favorite Bible story other than Jesus. We're on week three, my final sermon on the life of Joseph. We started week one. If you remember, we started dreaming God's dream. That's where we started, because we knew that Joseph had let go of maybe what a normal 17-year-old kid would do, and he was having dreams. And he was telling his brothers, and I don't think he thought they would react the way they did, but he was excited that God was calling him to do something. And I told you that God wants to do big things in your life, and you're going to have to put aside your aspirations, whatever it might be. Dan gave another good example. For him, it was coaching and math teaching, and you have to put aside whatever it is you want to do, right? And you have to say, okay, God, I'm going to dream your dream. And that was week one. Put aside your aspirations. Dream God's dream for yourself, because that's where you begin to succeed. Last week, it was trust and obey. Because Joseph, once he started down this path of doing what God wanted him to do, things got a little rough. And it took a lot of trust and a lot of obedience for Joseph to stay on that right path. And so that was week two. And what we're going to find out today is when you put those two together, when you dream God's dream, and when you trust and obey, God will work it out. That's the title of today's, God Will Work It Out. If you followed Sermon 1 and Sermon 2, and if you follow through, God's going to work it out. And as we today finish the story of Joseph, you're going to see exactly how God did that in the life of Joseph. We know Joseph came from the big family. 11 brothers, hated his guts, hated his guts. He was the favored boy. Dad made him a pretty coat. Dad treated him better than everybody else, so Joseph's favored. Not only is that bad enough, Joseph starts having dreams that says everybody's going to bow down to him. Doesn't keep those dreams to himself. He's excited. He thinks, one day I'm going to be a ruler, a leader, so he tells them all. And they think, we're going to kill you. He goes out to find them one day in the field to check on them for Dad, and they throw him in a pit, and they think, well, we could still kill him. One of the brothers says, let's not kill him, let's sell him, make a little cash. So they take off that beautiful robe, they tear it up, they put animal's blood on it, take it home to Dad, and say, an animal has killed your favorite son. All the while, they had sold him to the Ishmaelites. And then I'm sure the story just keeps getting worse for Joseph. You can imagine, we don't have all the details there, but you can imagine what it felt like to be thrown into an empty, dry pit. You can imagine what it felt like to be drug out of that pit, what kind of transportation he took from the Ishmaelites to get to Egypt. And then he was sold from the Ishmaelites to the captain of the Pharaoh's guard, Potiphar. And that was the first glimpse that we had of how Joseph, being the man that he was, God showed him favor. Joseph became a slave to the captain of the guard. And while he was there, he showed himself to be so honorable and so honest and such a good man that Potiphar said, man, you've become like a best friend to me. I mean, you can live in my house with me. I'm going to put you in charge of everything. When you're around Joseph, I don't have to worry about anything. This is great. And Joseph began to find favor, and things started to kind of work out. Well, Potiphar wasn't the only one that noticed Joseph. It was Potiphar's wife also noticed Joseph. And said, hey, this guy's not only smarter than my husband and runs his place better than him, he's better looking too. So she begins to hit on Joseph, not once, not twice, every day, it says. And Joseph did exactly what a godly man should do. And he said, no, you're crazy. This is wrong. You're married. And not only are you married, I work for your husband. And he has entrusted me with all of this. Why would I do something like that to him? You're his wife. What is going on here? And so one day, finally, she grabs a hold of him and basically wants to force him into the bedroom with her. And he literally does what he literally just takes his arms out of his cloak while she's pulling on it and walks out, runs away. I told you last week, there's your lesson. Say no, and if you have to, run away. And that's what he did. He got his arms out of the cloak and he runs out of the house. But when Potiphar comes home, she has his cloak and she says, he tried to attack me and I have his cloak here to prove it. And Joseph's thrown into prison. It's another instance where many of us might have given up. A lot of us would have given up as a 17-year-old when everybody hated us. Everybody hates us. Nobody likes us. I'm going to go sit in my room and cry, and I'm never going to amount to anything. I don't believe the dreams that God's given me. Joseph believed. A lot of us would have given up when we were in the bottom of the pit. A lot of us would have given up when we were sold into slavery. A lot of us would have been a jerk to Potiphar. But no way I'm going to treat you good. I'm your slave, and you're not going to treat me like this. Joseph just kept doing what he was told, being obedient, trusting God, and now where's it got him? Prison. And last week we left off because at the very end of the passage it said that even the warden of the Pharaoh's prison looked at Joseph and said, this guy is amazing. Joseph, when you're here, I don't have to worry about anything, and everybody likes to do less work. And so he said, I'm going to do nothing. You take care of the jail. And he literally put Joseph, who was a prisoner, in charge of the jail. And that's where our story is, where we pick up today. Joseph's known for his faithfulness, his holiness, his obedience, and he's in charge of everything. And when you're in charge of the jail, you know every person that comes in and out of the jail. And finally, one day, the Pharaoh has thrown his baker and his cupbearer into prison. Now, when you're the Pharaoh, you can throw people into prison for any reason whatsoever. Right? They can have broccoli between their teeth, and you don't like that, and you send them to prison. It doesn't matter. When you're the Pharaoh, you just go, gross, and get him out of here. So we really don't have good descriptions as to why, but we know oftentimes pharaohs and kings just got rid of people they didn't like. So Joseph's down there, and here comes the baker, and here comes the cupbearer, and they're now part of things, and Joseph's taking care of them like he takes care of everybody else. And one day, he happens in. Baker and the cupbearer probably knew each other from before, so they're talking. They're kind of in a bad mood. And Joseph says, hey, guys, what's wrong? And Joseph's concerned about people. That's the thing about Joseph. He didn't just take care of himself. He took care of other people. And he said, guys, what's wrong? And the cupbearer and the baker said, well, it's weird. We both had really weird dreams last night. And not just like any dream. Lots of us wake up with dreams. But you'd have to have a pretty vivid dream to worry about it the next day. I mean, some of us have woke up from a dream and thought, that was weird. And we might tell somebody else and laugh about it, or you might think to yourself, I'm never telling anybody about that one. But it was so vivid and so real to them, they knew there was meaning to it. You understand, there must have been a difference about this dream. It was so real that they said, something's going on. And they told Joseph, well, we have dreams, but we can't figure them out. And Joseph says, well, you know, that belongs to God and the interpretation of dreams. Tell me what you dream. Joseph has experience with dream. And the cupbearer says, well, my vision, my dream is of this vine. There's this vine and these three vines and they grow these grapes. And they come to blossom and bloom into these full, just beautiful clumps of grapes. And I take the king's cup and I squeeze the juice from the vine into this cup. And I take it and the king takes the cup from me. That's what my dream. And Joseph says, well, I know what that means. You do. He says, yeah. The three vines, in three days, the king is going to send for you. And you will be his cupbearer again. God's found favor. And in 3 days, you will once again be the cupbearer to the king. And he says, oh, man, that's great, Joseph. And the baker's over here going, that sounds great. I bet mine's a good one, too. And he says, I'll tell you my dream. And Joseph says, all right, come on, tell me your dream. And the baker says, okay, well, in my dream, you know how we have to carry baskets of, like we carry stuff on our head in baskets? Well, in my dream, I have three baskets of baked goods that I've made. And I'm carrying them on my head. But as I'm walking along, these stupid birds keep coming down, and they're eating all the stuff in my top basket. And they're just kicking it. And Joseph's going, well, your dream's not... It's not quite the same as his dream. Okay, I'm just going to be straight with you. You're going to die in 3 days. In 3 days, you're both going to be called up by the Pharaoh. He is going to be accepted back into the Pharaoh's good graces, and he's going to be cupbearer again. The king's going to impale you on a post. And he's like, oh, well, thanks. Can I just stay here? And that's not how it works, you know. But he told them exactly what those dreams would mean. I'm sure for 3 days, things were a little weird in the prison. But in 3 days, the Pharaoh sent for both those men. Now, one of the parts I didn't tell you is when the cupbearer got that good news, Joseph leans into him and says, hey, would you remember me? When you get there, you talk to the Pharaoh, would you remember me and what I did?
that for you? And he says, absolutely. Well, he finally gets back with the king. Birthday celebration. Cupbearer's back with the king. Baker's impaled on a post. You know, normal birthday celebration. So here they are having their, and guess what happened in all the hubbub and cake cutting and candles blowing out? Cupbearer totally forgets about Joseph. Now here's another opportunity where Joseph kicks and screams and throws things at people and rants and raves and says, get that cupbearer back down here. Joseph doesn't say a word. Joseph keeps serving. And in 2 years, the Pharaoh's the one that has the dream. And the Pharaoh has every wise man in the kingdom come in, every magician, every person that could give him something. And they must have all been so off mark that he wouldn't listen to any of them. He says, no, that ain't right. That ain't right. And finally, the cupbearer, hey, I remember a guy. Oh, do you? Thanks. 2 years later, when the Pharaoh's saying, I can't figure out a dream, the cupbearer goes, dreams, dreams. Oh, yeah. There's a guy down in the prison. Man, if you have a dream, he knows it. Do you remember when we, what's his name? Shish kebab. I don't know what his name was. But you put him out front. He told him that was going to happen. And he told me that I was going to get my job back. It all came true. And the Pharaoh goes, why are we still talking? Go get this guy. So they go and get Joseph. They shave him. They clean him up. We've said before, it says he's a very good-looking, handsome guy. So they clean him all up. He comes into the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh says, they say you can interpret my dreams. Joseph says, dreams are interpreted by God. He gives me that information. And so he tells Joseph his dream. He said, I have this dream where these seven beautiful calves come out of the Nile River. Beautiful. But right after them, seven ghastly, emaciated, gross-looking cattle come out and eat the seven healthy ones. It's just crazy. But no more than that had happened. These seven stalks of just great, beautiful, perfect, ready-to-be-harvest grain comes out. And you're thinking, oh, that's wonderful. And he says, then these nasty, wilted, burnt by the sun, grain comes out and it does away with the seven. He says, what is going on? And I want to share with you in the first passage that we're going to read today what Joseph told him. And that is in Genesis 41, 25 through 32. It says, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain that were scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that followed will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. So he even says, not only do I know the meaning, but I'm telling you, God gave it to you in two forms because it is definite. We don't even need to pray about it. Like, it's done. It's happening. And of course, the Pharaoh's thinking, all right, now what am I supposed to do with this information? You realize when people became pharaohs, half the time they were nine, right? These people, they don't have like a degree in anything. They're just the king. And so you're sitting there on the throne, and the guy comes in, and he goes, so you're going to have seven really good years and then seven really bad years. And he's going, what do I do? Right? I mean, really. He's thinking, do I lose my whole kingdom? Are we all going to die? I don't know what to do. And Joseph gives him advice. He says, you've got to find someone very wise who can overtake this and make sure your people are taken care of. If you don't save grain and take care during those first 7 years, you're all going to die. And when you go to Genesis 41 and verse 38, it says, so Pharaoh asked them, he looked around at everybody else and he said, can we find anyone like this man? One in whom is the Spirit of God? Notice the Holy Spirit hadn't even been given yet. But even the Pharaoh knew that the Spirit of God was in Joseph. Notice that. There's no talk of the Holy Spirit around the world. This is the Pharaoh saying, God is in this man. And he says, the Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace. And all the people are to submit to you, to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Do you get that? When you are second in charge to Pharaoh, you're in charge. Pharaoh does nothing. He says, other than sitting on this throne and being called Pharaoh, everything goes through you. Remember those dreams Joseph had when he was a young man? Remember all the stuff Joseph went through? And now the Pharaoh's looking at him and says, hey, you know what? I'm going to put you in charge of Egypt. Excuse me? You got a telegram machine here? I got some brothers I need to talk to. Right? But you're standing there out of the pit, out of the prison, standing in front of the Pharaoh, and he goes, you're in charge of everything. That's amazing. That's enough to blow us away. But things begin to play out just like Joseph said. Everything, when Joseph listens to God and shares what God wants him to share, it plays out just like he says. Because Joseph isn't doing this on his own. He's speaking what God tells him to speak. And so the famine comes on just at the time he said it would, but all the food has been saved like Joseph said it should be. And so everything's happening. It's not just Egypt that's dying in the famine. Everybody is. And so lo and behold, there's this group of hooligans over in Canaan that are hungry. And Jacob says, boys, somebody's got to go to Egypt and get us some food. Everybody but Benjamin, ten of you, keep my youngest boy here. Last time I sent Joseph out for you, you know what happened. So leave Benjamin here. The rest of you go get us food in Egypt. They show up. They don't know Joseph. Joseph knows them. Joseph accuses them of all kinds of things just for fun. You're thieves. No, we're not. He really does. He messes around with them, but he's so forgiving. He gives them all the grain they want, and he says, put their money back in the bag under the grain so when they get home, they can have their money back. But he begins to question them about their family. And it's like, well, we got a sick dad, we got a younger brother at home. And he goes, well, if you ever need food again, you can't have it unless you bring all your brothers. Bring your youngest brother with you. He wanted to see Benjamin. That was his only full brother. And he said, I want to see my brother. He didn't say that. He just said, well, I'm not going to give you food unless you bring your youngest brother with you. Well, when they go home and they tell their dad that, the dad's like, there's no way you're taking Benjamin. I've lost one son. I'm not letting you take him. And he holds to it until they're hungry again and they start to need food. And he sends them all back. And it's not until they all get back there, all the brothers are there. He plays another trick on them. He hides a royal cup in Benjamin's bag and they act like they're going to arrest Benjamin for stealing it, going to throw him in. And the brothers are all upset. And finally, Joseph says, hey, guys, man, hey, it's me. Can you imagine? Him. He's the one. I'm not even old enough. I didn't say anything about a pit. I was like, I like your coat, dude. I thought it was cool. They're the ones that threw. Can you imagine the pointing of fingers and how terrified you would be? It's not just, you didn't bump into him at Walmart and go, oh, I didn't recognize you with the goatee. No, you've now run into your brother that you sold into slavery and he's the leader of Egypt. When you are the leader of Egypt, you're the king of the world. And he has all the food. And also, there's that part of your mind that goes, hey, you remember that dream he had? We bowed down to him when we came the first time, didn't we? Oh, my goodness, I can't believe we bowed down to Joseph. Right? Everything is just like he said. Because of his obedience and because of the way he did what God wanted him to do. And he said, guys, it's okay. Please go get Dad. Go get Dad. I want you to bring Dad, and I want you to bring everything we own, kids, grandkids, cattle, everything. You come here, you're going to live here with me, and I will take care of you. Blows him away. Just blows him away. His love, his kindness, his obedience to God, and they're going, this guy is amazing. So they come back with Dad, and everything goes pretty well. I do want you to see when he revealed himself to them in Genesis 45, 8 through 11. He says, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all of Egypt. Come down to me and don't delay. And as we go on in that, he basically says, you've got to bring everybody here or everybody's going to die, but I want to take care of you. And that's exactly how it works out until Jacob dies. And Jacob dies, his father. And all the brothers start looking around and say, hey, this is when Joseph gets us, right? He's been doing all this for dad's sake. Dad's gone now, and he's about to drop the hammer. And it takes me all the way to chapter 50 for my favorite verses of the story of Joseph. It's this huge story, and you get all the way to the end of the story, and he looks at his scared brothers. And in Genesis chapter 50, 19 through 21 are my favorite verses, and he says, but Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? And listen, he said, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of so many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them, and he spoke kindly to them. Joseph said, and listen again, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. You want to know what the point of today is? People, this world does not intend good for you. This world has not one good plan in mind for you. This world has only evil in mind. They don't want us to succeed. They don't want us to be great because our plans are different than their plans. Our goals are God's plans, not their plans. And so once I say I'm dreaming God's dreams, their immediate reaction is, I hope you fail. I'll do everything I can to stop you, and I will trip you up somehow. And boy, if Joseph didn't go through it. He saw one after the other after the other. And when he got to where he was supposed to go, he says, I know what you were up to, but God intended it for good. I want you to understand, if you will dream God's dream, if you will trust and obey, God will work it out. I'm not telling you you're going to be a king in this world, but I'm telling you there's a crown in heaven waiting for you. I don't know how long it's going to take us to get there. And I don't know what I'm going to have to go through. But I know that there's royalty waiting for me in heaven. It will work out. This is why I love the story of Joseph. I love the story of Joseph because it rips away so much of the false teachings of the church in one story. There's so many people today, well, if you're a Christian, you know, you're healthy and you're wealthy and you get all this. Man, Joseph's life stunk. It was terrible until he got to where God finally wanted him. There was pain, there was terror, there was fear, there was all kinds of these things, all the things that we face. But in the end, God worked it out. And what I want you to know is there's a verse that we throw around in the church all the time. And I'm telling you, this verse only matters if you do the things that we're talking about. This verse only matters if you are following God's will, if you're trusting and obeying, then you can say Romans 8:28, right? And we know that in all things, God works together for the good of those that love him and are called according to his purpose. We throw that verse around to everybody. You'll go into a funeral to somebody who's not a Christian, their loved one wasn't a Christian, and you'll say to them, well, we know God works together. Whoa, whoa, read the rest of the verse. Right? What I'm telling you today is God's going to work it out while you work for him. With me? Don't go around thinking God's going to fix everything for you when you aren't doing what he asked you to do. Don't think that you can run around breaking the law. God will fix it. Is that how that works? I didn't read that part. What I saw was a man who did everything he could to be obedient to God, no matter the circumstance. No circumstance in your life gives you free rein to be disobedient. Joseph took whatever came his way and just kept doing what God wanted to do because in his mind he knew God is going to take care of this. I know people on their deathbed who say the same things. I sat right here this morning and talked to Margaret about her brother, who's days away from passing. We know that. It's not fun to talk about. I talked to her about my own father and what it's like to sit at the bedside of somebody who knows that God's going to work it out. It's not fun. It's not fun to be sick. It's not fun to swell up and not look like yourself and be told by the doctor your body's failing and all those things. But you can look at each other and say, it's all right. God's going to work it out. There was a doctor that sat across from my grandmother one time with tears running down his face, and he said, your brain tumor is inoperable. And my grandmother reached over and pats him and says, it's all right, it's going to be fine. She died 9 months later because she knew God was going to work it out. I want you to be able to say what Joseph said. That's the whole point of me doing three weeks worth of teaching on Joseph, so that you can get to the point where you can say what Joseph said. I'm not going to lie to you like other people might and tell you nothing bad is going to happen. I'm not going to tell you that you won't have tough times. I am going to tell you that what we learn from Joseph's story is that you must dream God's dream. You must trust and obey him. And when you do, God will work it out. God will take care of it. He's got it under control. And that's what I want you to know today. I want you to know that God means good for you. God means good for you. No matter what the world throws at you, God has a good plan in mind for you. And I know it sounds tough, but when God's dream is first, that means that your tough situation might make you a more perseverant person. It might give you patience. It might build love. It might build faith. It might make you more kind. It might build in you a better understanding of someone else who's hurting. You know, sometimes you've probably hurt so that you could better understand somebody else who is hurting. You know, almost every time I preach at a funeral, when I go to the cemetery, I read a passage that says, God is the God of all comfort, who comforts you in your trouble so that you can now comfort others with the comfort God has given you. So do you understand that sometimes God's giving you things so that you can use it to give to somebody else? So the next time you're having a bad time, you might think, you know what? There's a lot of other people that have been through this. I didn't realize what this felt like till now. And so what I want you to understand is every single scenario that you live out in your life, if you are following God's will, if you are trusting him, and you are being obedient, you can look at it and say, you know what? It's going to be okay. God's going to take care of this. God's going to work it out. I want you to know that. That's what builds faith in people. You ever look at people in those situations and go, man, how are they doing that? That's how. That's how. That's what you have to do. That's the story of Joseph. Are you putting God's dream first? Have you put your trust in him? Trust him enough to be obedient in every situation. And most of all, do you understand that God's going to work it out? If you do, it will change you. It will change the way you live. And I pray that you'll let God do that.